really comfortable, and really comfortable also in the discomfort that other people might have.
Welcome to the Circle Holding Podcast with me, Julia Davis.
And me, Tessa Venuti-Sanderson. We are the co-authors of the book Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles.
We would love for you to join us for free talks, question and answer sessions, all about the art of holding circle. You can find these at circleholding.org.
A very warm welcome today to Jane Bennett. It's Tessa here. I'm talking to the founder of the Celebration Day for Girls and the Chalice Foundation. She's also the author of A Blessing, Not a Curse, and About Bloody Time. And I think it's quite auspicious that I'm day one. So feels like it's the day to do this conversation with you. Very warm welcome, Jane. Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you, Tessa. And it's delightful to be here with you and with you on day one.
Thank you. So I would love to start with understanding a bit about your intention when you started the Celebration Day for Girls, because in the book, we really dive into why it's so important to be clear on your intention, because that answers so many questions about how somebody might want to run their circle. So would you like to tell me kind of how it all started?
Absolutely. And it was nearly a quarter of a century ago. So I may not be 100% clear on all of that, because there's been a lot of contemplation since and a lot of clarifying since what we're really doing. But how it came about is that my daughter's school knew that I had been working in natural fertility management. So I'd been counselling and teaching in fertility awareness methods. That's for women and couples and also for health practitioners. So the school asked me, would I run a day on puberty and menstruation for the mothers and daughters of the year 5 and 6 girls? So that would be girls turning 11 and girls turning 12. So very much the demographic that we still have for Celebration Day for Girls. So although I hadn't ever trained to teach children and hadn't had that experience, I'd done a certain amount of adult education. But of course, it was such a wonderful invitation. I wasn't going to turn it down. And I had given quite a lot of thought to this area because my daughter had just finished at that primary school. And so for her and her friends, you know, we were very much in that zone. And I was having lots of informal conversations with my friends and the mums of, you know, their girls about this, and realizing that particularly for women who were wanting something better, wanting a better experience for their daughters, but not having any modeling, not knowing where are the resources, how do we do this? And so, you know, I spent some time looking around for the resources and the books, and until one day I realized, well, I think it's me. I think I need to do this. So which led to the book that you mentioned about A Blessing, Not a Curse, that came out in 2002. And so as far as the when the school made this invitation, of course, you know, I had a bit of time and I gave it a lot of thought. And I decided to call it A Celebration Day for Girls as really as a way to indicate the intention that this was a positive celebratory experience. And we were celebrating this transformation that they were in the midst of. Now we sometimes, you know, would use a tagline, you know, positive period preparation. So these are the intention. And I also wanted to realize that I needed to support the mothers and the girls and the mother-daughter relationship. So there were sort of three distinct parts to this. So so that's why we have, you know, the women only, the mothers session separate to the celebration day, and then we have time with just the girls, and then the mothers come back and we're all together for the last part of the workshop.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there. Before we do, I think I'm right in saying that you have a background in anthropology. Am I right?
Well, kind of. I got my degree in social work, but I started in anthropology and I did 2 years of anthropology at the only university that was offering it at the time in Melbourne. And that was my real passion. But somewhere along the line, I was uninspired by the teaching at the time and kind of real wondering to myself, well, where's a career in this? It didn't seem like a lot of openings. So I jumped ship, but I've still maintained, you know, a real passion for anthropology as my first sort of professional love, if you like.
Yeah, because I also studied anthropology and it just made me wonder whether there was something in the time that you did study and the books you were reading, I don't know, Margaret Mead and people like that, where you saw something maybe in other cultures that did celebrate this time of a girl's life and that transition, thinking about rites of passage and things like that, whether consciously or subconsciously, like, oh, there's something missing here at the moment in our culture, in our society, that is not helping our girls.
I have to say that when I first went to university, it was almost 50 years ago. So my memory of that is also a bit hazy. But I certainly remember Margaret Mead and, you know, many other authors that I was reading at the time. And they were certainly talking about rites of passage and, you know, puberty being one of them and menarche being one of them. But it was in amongst a whole lot of other stuff. So it probably went in somewhere. It wasn't until about 7 or 8 years later that I started learning fertility awareness for myself. And that was the real epiphany for me. And it probably at some point in my mind would have tied back into, you know, that fascination with other cultures and different cultures who had different understandings and, you know, would see this as an important rite of passage instead of our own, which tries to make it as invisible and as possible.
And that was certainly my experience in running my women's circle, was that because it started as a red tent, and so we would always check in where people were in their cycle. And what I found was a lot of women would say, why did I not know this when I started my periods, like 20 years ago, 30 years ago? And that's when I decided I wanted to start bringing it to the girls. And I did the celebration day for girls training because I thought, well, yeah, let's take it straight to those girls. So they've got that knowledge right from the beginning. I would love to know a bit more. You were mentioning about speaking to the mums separately, and I think that is so key in how the whole process unfolds. So could you say a bit more about why that happens?
Sure, and there are a number of reasons. One is very practical, just to talk to them about the, you know, what will be happening during the day, what preparation they need to make, you know, what they might need to bring in terms of morning tea and lunch and so on. So it's quite practical. And also, you know, giving them a sense of what the day is about. Obviously, they've booked in and they've, you know, they're aware generally. But really for them, often at that point, they haven't met the facilitator or me in that case. And it's helpful, really helpful to spend time with the facilitator for the mums to feel confident, oh, yes, you know, this approach feels good. It feels wholesome. It feels really positive for my daughter. Because if we haven't had, or if they haven't had experience of menstrual educators with this kind of approach, it's very hard to imagine. And most of us haven't. Most of us haven't had that modelling or haven't had that kind of guidance where you've got someone with you who's very positive, you know, obviously factual, but really comfortable, and really comfortable also in the discomfort that other people might have. So, you know, quite aware of all of that. And that helps everybody relax and feel comfortable and also feel well held in terms of the circle and in terms of this, you know, what can be very sensitive material that they may never have shared with anybody prior to that time. I've sometimes felt over the years that much as, you know, I love every part of Celebration Day for Girls, that in some ways, the mother session is most important of all, because the mothers are going to spend, and I often say this to mums, you know, you're going to be in the hot seat for years. You know, we've just got a day here. These are some tips. These are some ways. Or what are your questions? What are your concerns? So we try and build that into the mother session, that there's support for mums to help them with, you know, their concerns, or put in their way, you know, resources that could be really helpful for them. And they often do report that there's things that have changed considerably from before the workshop to after the workshop, in terms of their confidence, in terms of their daughter's openness to asking questions and talking, and feeling more able to manage this time and be more positive about their period coming, whether that's next week or in a few years.
Yeah, I've often found that although, you know, girls sometimes might be a bit reluctant at first, by the end of the day, they're saying, oh, can I come back next Sunday? They really, there's something has changed. But I agree with you that the mums also get so much out of it. And I think sometimes they can feel a bit lost beforehand because they perhaps haven't had this process modelled to them about how is a good way to support a daughter. Perhaps it was very a neutral experience for them, or a negative experience, but they don't know how to do it differently. And to come into that space and see a different way is just, I'm going to choose the word healing, actually. I think heals the red thread going backwards and also forwards. I think it can work for so many different kinds of circles that you have a sort of check-in beforehand. You know, it's quite a big thing, isn't it, for the celebration day for girls with the mums, where you spend time, all the practicalities. But sometimes with other circles, I just might have a quick phone call, but managing the person's expectations about what exactly is going to happen. They may have never been in that kind of space before. So I think it's really good as a facilitator to think about having that contact before the main event. I just think this is so topical because at the moment in the UK, we've got petitions at two ends of the spectrum going on, because it was made compulsory that sex education was included in the curriculum. And I saw a petition saying that people want to reverse that and not have it as compulsory anymore. And then there are other people getting upset saying, no, it absolutely has to be, and it should be earlier than it currently is. So I think it's so important what we're talking about. Can you say something a little bit about how you, because you talked about the idea coming from school and initially you went into a school. But I feel like the format of Celebration Day for Girls is quite different from the school environment, which it can be really encouraging for girls with this particular topic. So can you talk a bit more about how it developed over the years?
Yes, absolutely. And I do think, you know, I mean, we've often run celebration days in schools, but not as part of the regular school day. You know, it's quite separate in that sense. We might use the space, or we might be invited in by the school. And I think given the nature of menstruation, where it sits culturally in our society, and there's certainly changes going on, but you know, overall it still certainly tips into the, you know, uncomfortable, shameful, negative kind of basket. And because of that, and because, you know, for, as you kind of mentioned too, for many girls they're you know, feeling very shy or embarrassed at the beginning of the day, and have moved through that, often even quite quickly, I find, you know, through the power of someone being modelling positivity and comfort and fun and, you know, we're doing good things and just learning about how many amazing things there are about their body and how their bodies work and how their cycle will work for them too, that... Because we're trying to deal with quite a profound challenge in society. So everything else I try to make as comfortable and easy as possible for people. So therefore, I find the circle format You know, it's very egalitarian. We set it up so that, you know, we're trying to show respect for and really give comfort for each person, that they're really valuable to us. So we don't have big groups. They're, you know, at the most 15. Some facilitators cut it off at 12. Just so that we can really be present with each girl. Of course, it doubles once the mums come in the room, but it still means that we can be really aware of what's happening for each person and support them. So that to me is really important. And so don't try to manage a whole lot of other things, a whole lot of other challenging things. We've got one real task. One real process that we're trying to support the participants with.
I think one of the things that's so clever about how it's set up is keeping them busy with their hands as well. Because I think with any topic that might be a bit taboo or sensitive or challenging, if somebody's eyes and hands are busy, then they can be listening, but it's not so intense. It's not that you're looking at somebody else's eyes like you might in a classroom at the teacher giving you information. So that I just think that's such a clever way of doing it.
I'm going to make a confession to you. Part of coming up with that after the first workshop I ran, where I was initially giving information and, you know, saying all the wonderful things, that was like, and I just had all these, you know, 12 pairs of eyes just staring at me, and it made me feel really uncomfortable, and I couldn't tell how that was for them. So I thought, well, let's mix it up a bit, and it so that was part of my motivation. But it's I think it does work well, and it helps girls who might be, you know, juggling with some feelings, that they can have some other focus. And very often, you know, really paying a lot of attention and listening to what's going on, but they can also be busy with something else. So I think for their brain, for their mind, for their processing of information, I think it allows the emotions to settle.
And I think the other thing that I've really noticed is how being in a circle around that kind of topic supports normalization of talking about this, like you mentioned about the positivity as well, because I often think that the mums that book onto that kind of event are open, they're trying to be open with their daughters, but there's something about seeing other adults that aren't your mum also talking openly and sharing experiences that you go, oh, okay, maybe it is all right. It's not just that my mum is a bit weird. That's what my girls would say. So this normalization is incredibly important.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think I'm just going to comment on one of the things you said, which is, you know, seeing other adults. So whether it's the facilitator or at later in the day, you know, when they're hearing from other mums, I think that's one of the really important ingredients of the day, it starts to kind of go, oh, okay, this really does happen for everybody, and they're hearing a variety of stories from the different mums or the facilitator, and so it normalizes whatever happens for you, you know, or whatever your experience is. Whereas for many women, they, you know, they haven't shared their own menarche story with anybody, even family members, so they don't know what's normal and what's not. And, you know, so many carry almost a shame or a burden of feeling like, oh, I don't know if I'm normal. Is this okay? Or is this how it's meant to be? And just a lot of anxiety about their ongoing menstrual experience, because of ignorance of not having had, you know, what we really need is ongoing menstrual education. Just, you know, dropped in age-appropriate ways, or and able to have conversations and able to have places where we can be heard, and there's someone able to facilitate that circle. I just want to briefly tell you a story about a school in Australia who I went to run a training for 8 of the staff there so that they could all be Celebration Day facilitators. And some of them were also mums of girls in the school. And they've had Celebration Days for their, ever since. And that's about 10 years ago now. But what they also do is for the few years afterwards where the girls are still at the school, is they have, once every term, they'll have a girls' tea party. So they have a conversation with one of these teachers that have that facilitate this program, and have a cup of tea, have some biscuits, and they might be talking about relationships and difficulties that they're having, but they can also be talking about periods or is this okay or this is what's happening, and of course these are very safely, carefully held groups. So there's confidentiality, and girls have learnt this is someone they can, they can have these conversations. So even if they go along and, they don't particularly have any burning issues, it's a safe place, and they can hear, and they can share, and they can listen with others. And all of that helps normalise their experience and their sense of a supportive culture around them. Where if they are having problems, they don't need to wait even for that time. They could go to that person. And, of course, hopefully they can go to their parents as well, but in some cases not. It's nice to have a range of people you can talk to, isn't it?
I think that's another valuable aspect of it, is that you're modelling how women and girls can come together. And you talked at the beginning sort of about this egalitarian setup, and everybody can have a chance to talk. And I think sometimes people have never experienced that before. If they've only sort of been in school or workplaces perhaps where it's not a comfortable place to share your experiences, or this sort of culture of getting one over on the other person. So I think it's beautiful to plant that seed for girls, that there are spaces that their authentic self is welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of our key human needs or desires is to feel heard, which relates very much to being somewhere where we are seen and heard, and that there is space for that. It's not, we're not just giving... there's a chart and I'm telling you how this works, though certainly great to add in information, but there's also space to hear from you and you and you and how it is for you.
And then I think it was in 2004 you brought the fathers in, wanting to help them, help their daughters to navigate this time. Can you say a bit about how is it set up differently, or kind of did the dads respond differently? What was your experience of that?
Not that differently, I have to say. And of course, men as in groups are, often behave somewhat differently. And men who come along to a program like Fathers Celebrating Daughters, I'm not basing this on research, but maybe particular types of men as well. They're men who can afford to pay something. We don't charge a lot, but they pay for it. Often they're strongly encouraged by the mother of their children, and some are very keen to come themselves. One particular thing that stands out to me, because sometimes I will be coming into a group where I don't know anybody, but they know each other, if it's fathers of a class group. And sometimes they might not know each other, but even so, men are very frank with each other. They're not as careful as women not to hurt each other. And particularly with men, I don't recommend that across the board necessarily, but with men that have a certain degree of self-awareness on board, it's actually kind of refreshing. And so I, I had worked a lot with, you know, women and girls, and through natural fertility management, we mostly had female, you know, health practitioners coming to our programs, you know, our training programs and so on. So it was actually, you know, quite different and really interesting. So I was learning a lot by working with men. But overall, I'd have to say that they were so keen, and they so wanted to be able to support their daughters in more ways. And obviously, a mother's role and a father's role with supporting their daughter through puberty and menarche and onwards into regular periods is going to be quite different, you know. But there's, you know, it's so important and it's so valuable if a father can be actively involved or find ways that they can be supportive, even just like, you know, knowing what pads or tampons or products that their family members, you know, prefer, and being able to get them at the supermarket without a fuss, or keeping some in their glove box or the spare bathroom at their workplace or wherever it is. These can be simple, practical things. And one of the things I've found with dads, it's probably also a bit archetypal, is they really like to feel there's something they can do. so they love some tips, and, you know, and I know that when I do get feedback that that's worked out well for them. They really like to be able to be present rather than sort of back out of the room for the next sort of 8 years. And it's good for girls to otherwise they think, oh, dad doesn't know about this, or it's not okay to say anything to dad about this. Whereas actually, if they see that dad is an ally and will support them, whether they're up or down or which phase of the cycle they're in or whatever's going on, and dad can help them understand what's going on through learning himself, it's so good for girls' confidence.
I was thinking, what tips would you give to a new facilitator? You know, perhaps they're feeling really passionate about something. They want to bring a group of people together. And you've already mentioned lots of really useful things. But is there kind of main tip when you started out, or with you know, in retrospect, that you think that's a really key thing to keep in mind?
Oh, so pick a one. one of the things that I commonly say, and keeping in mind that I'm really, you know, training people for, is menstrual education. So these are groups, you know, in circles to facilitate with menstrual education, is that for all the material or the processes or the information that they share or the discussions that they have, the absolute most important thing is their presence as a facilitator. They are holding the group. It's their state, in a way, and their intention for the group, how they are holding that group, that is most important of all. Now, that can sound scary if someone hasn't done facilitation before. It's like, oh, my God, I've got to be in some perfect state. And I don't mean that at all. But I do mean whatever helps you to be present. So that may be all the stuff you do outside your groups, you know, taking care of yourself, being able to be self-aware and observe yourself in real time, being able to notice if somebody has said something that, oh, that makes me feel a bit uncomfortable, rather than be reactive to that, being able to just be self-aware. That's part of it. And what, I mean, it comes down to also what will help make this space that I'm working in comfortable for the people coming and really support me in holding that group. So all sorts of ways, from practical to, you know, just psychological, how we turn up and be present for that group. And one of the ways that I do that is often, you know, if I'm running a celebration day for girls, I do all the practical, you know, there's all the practical stuff and the admin that happens beforehand. I will get to the venue with plenty of time to set up. And sometimes if it's a venue I haven't been to before, it might be a person's home or it might be a classroom somewhere or a community room, you know, space. Sometimes you've got to clean up a bit and move furniture around a bit and throw cloths over things and just kind of make it your own. So I allow plenty of time for that. And I allow time where I will have all that done and then I can have, it might be 15, 20 minutes and might be with a cup of tea, but it's also a time to just let all that settle, let all that preparation settle. And I mean, I already fully have my intention for the group, but actually it's almost a time where I make a prayer and hand it over. It's like, may whatever everybody needs come through for them today. I don't know what that is. I've prepared this vessel and this vehicle, and may everyone receive what they need today. So that kind of helps me hand it over in a way. I know my business. I know what I need to do, but I'm not trying to take charge of everybody's experience. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that's such a great tip. I think it's so important because I think when people come to a gathering like that, or even as a new facilitator, your focus is all on the actual event. But it's the preparation. People don't realize the preparation that goes in beforehand. And also I find not just after a celebration day for girls, but also my women's circle, I need a bit of time to kind of settle, you know, I've got all these thoughts going in my mind of things that people have said, and I potter around tidying up and just letting everything settle afterwards.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great tip. Mm. Is there anything else that you would like to say over these decades now of, I just think they're so important, these celebration days for girls and the other work that you've been doing?
Well, I guess I'll reflect for a moment on my own experience of, you know, and for a celebration day for girls, you know, I'm enormously pleased and gratified that it has grown the way that it has and it's happening in all the different places that it's happening. I've also immensely enjoyed running training programs for new facilitators, and we do that in a circle format as well. And truly, each time, whether it's with girls and mums, whether it's with new facilitators, you know, and as you know, we have a program, we have, you know, things we need to get through. But underlying that, there is just the magic of the circle and the magic of the people who turn up being present and having that time together. It does feel like we're stepping outside of time. It does feel like, you know, there's the surface things that we're doing and needing to discuss and work through. But there's underneath that, there's this whole wonderful layer of just being together in a really loving, respectful, very juicy way. And every time is, I appreciate that all over again, because it's very, it's alchemical. It can't be, you can't predict it. You can't make it happen. You can't make it be a certain way. There's this other thing that happens. And I just have immense joy and appreciation for the magic of that, really.
Yeah, alchemy was the word that was really coming to mind as you were speaking. And I think that circle time is definitely more than the sum of the parts. That's, yeah, I think that's a beautiful place to end, the magic of circles. Thank you so much, Jane. In the notes below the episode, you'll find all of the details for her incredible work, the research in the books, and it's there's a big resource there, isn't there, Jane?
Thank you so much, Tessa. Great speaking with you.
You've been listening to the Circle Holding Podcast. I've been Tessa Venuti Sanderson.
And I've been Julia Davis. We would love for you to rate and review this podcast. A 5-star rating means more people will find us.
We're the co-authors of the book Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles.
Thank you for joining us today.
You can find our trainings at circleholding.org. We hope that you find a community where you can be authentically you very soon.